Hi, everybody. This is Armand DeMille.
This is Roberta Maria Atti.
Atti.
Yes, Atti.
Atti. Atti. I like that.
Thank you.
You know, where are you going to be? I'll be sitting at tea. Having some tea. So let me tell you what brings us to our conversation today. You know, there's a... Michael was 16-year-old when his life changed, right? He was what they called mentally retarded. They gave him psychotropic medications to decrease his agitation. This is a story about a young man. He moved on from one hospital after another. They gave him more medications. It blunted his emotional expression, and he had terrible symptoms. He had 2 years later, under a court order mandating the removal of non-criminal patients from prison, he was transferred to a difficult-to-manage unit in a state institution. From there, he went to an intermediate care unit, and that's where it happened again. And this young guy now, Michael, 52 years old, he started going out to, he was under the treatment of the psychiatrist, and the psychiatrist tells a story about how he was treating this guy, Michael, who was just clearly considered a basket case. You know, fairly well put together basket case. And he's getting all of these medications and he's barely there. And the psychiatrist meets with him and talks with him. Tell the rest of the story, Roberta.
Well, the article is written in the first person by this psychiatrist who took an interest in this young man who had been given up for as criminally insane and basically locked up and medicated into a stupor until this psychiatrist intervened and really interacted with this man in such a way that this man, by the time he turned 52, was able to go out into a mall and shop around like a normal person. Except that one day, the psychiatrist tells the story, one day he himself was feeling down because he had lost a long-term relationship and he was doing his best to hide his feelings in front of his patients and co-workers. And he thought he was doing a good job at that because he's a trained, you know, psychological worker, so he knows how to hide his emotions. And so one day he came to his office, and standing in front of the door waiting for him was Michael, this young man, well, no longer a young man, but the criminally insane
52-year-old guy who could barely move from place to place, but right. Very awkward. You look at him, he did look a little strange.
Yeah, and he was waiting there, standing with his eyes staring at the doctor who was approaching his office.
This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti here. And the thing that got us curious about this, a psychiatric patient, 52 years old now, having been internalized in a hospital, in institutions all of his life, heavily medicated, under treatment. The guy is barely functional. And the psychiatrist who is treating him has this personal problem. And then nobody notices it. He hides it. And then all of a sudden, waiting outside the door, here stands his patient.
Here is Michael and the guy who is considered criminally insane, and he puts his hand on the doctor's shoulder and looks at him straight in the eyes with a piercing look and says, "Doctor, everything is going to be all right." And the doctor for a moment, you know, thought that this guy was going to kill him or something. That was what was expected of him. And yet, he calls it the seed of compassion. There was something in this person, unexpected. The seed of what? Morality? Of caring? Of empathy? What was it? But it worked.
And that led us on our pursuit of morality as an issue. This led to what makes people care? Where does it come from? Is it a biological origin? I mean, morality is such a big issue. You know, so much. I mean, it was morality that wound up putting Bush in office. You know, there was a moral vote. Right? Remember, you know, the morality of homosexual marriages?
Yeah.
Right?
It's interesting how everyone has their own working definition of what morality is. But it seems that when we come to trying to achieve an agreement on what it really is, very few people agree on a common idea of it.
Well, it seems that morality means that at some point you have a feeling, and a feeling leads you in one direction, and you question the direction, and then your mind, you make a rational choice between one or another things to do. So morality, you see a wallet sitting on the street, right? Or I remember once I left my wallet in a taxi cab, and it was 2 days later, me having regretted, lost the money and everything, a man comes to me. And he was a Sikh, you know, S-I-K-H, Sikh, in a Sikh religion. And he calls me up and he says, look, he says, I have your wallet. I want to return it to you. And I gave it to me and I said, let me give you a reward. And he said, no. And I said, well, look, there happened to be a lot of money in this wallet this time. I had just collected a debt someone had given me. I said, why didn't you take part of it? What made you give it back? What made you hunt me up and go through the inconvenience? He said, it is not allowed for me to keep it. He said, I wouldn't think twice about keeping it.
Right.
I could only think about my obligation to return it.
So then, Armand, what I hear you say is that perhaps morality doesn't always involve thinking.
Sometimes it's a felt morality
that
doesn't involve a choice, but it is a choice. So here's what we discovered. Let's go back a little bit in time. And one of the studies by Nicholas Wade wrote an article about animals and how animals seem to show a moral code of some kind.
Well, you know what, Armand? I would like to go, yes, to go to the work of Dr. Wall, is it, that Nicholas Wade. Writes about? No, actually, he writes about Wall,
right.
Wall, yeah. But I would like to start by saying that it seems to me that morality is a code of behavior that we learn very early on, maybe even at conception. I mean, it could be said that some seeds of morality could even be in the genes that we inherit. And this behavior allows us to walk the fine line between self-interest and interest of the species and interest of life in general. So it really, I think, comes from balancing the different instinct and what they could lead to in competition and cooperation.
Well, wait, but now you got seven issues working.
Because now we're going to have talking about morality.
Okay, but now we've got instinct, we got DNA, we got a whole bunch of things. Let's start with a simple one, okay?
Hey, I was just making a statement.
No, I understand. I understand. I agree with all of your statements.
Thank you.
But here's a question you have. We have a question about, is there an unconscious kind of morality? Is there a sense of morality that's unconscious? Is there one that's not in our conscious? But Roberta Maria makes a statement. She says, it is a choice between what's good for you and what's good for those around you, which could mean everything around you. You know, it could mean the immediate family, it could mean your friends, it could mean your society, it could mean your species.
Well, because survival often involves a choice between the self-interest, what's best for me, versus what's best for my community.
So if somebody thinks, I wonder if I should have this affair, it's a moral issue to them, and they say, gee, I don't know, you know, I don't know if I should do that to my husband or if I should do that to my wife.
I don't know how that's going to affect my family, my friends, my behavior at work.
Well, it's
all these questions.
And what happens in Los Angeles stays in Las Vegas. So nobody will ever know. Therefore, it's not a moral issue.
Say that again? What stays in Las Vegas moves to Los Angeles?
What happens in Los Angeles moves to Alaska.
Okay, I'll go for that.
No, the idea that nobody's going to find out. And this idea that if you're sure that what you're doing is an isolated thing and nobody's going to find out, therefore it's not a question of morality, therefore you could do anything and there is no right or wrong. And I want to bring us, we're going to go back to our animals in a minute. I want to bring us to the Catholic Church. And I want to go to the Catholic Church because I remember as a question that when I was a child going to a thing called confession, which is where you go and you admit all of your moral conflicts.
On your knees.
On your knees.
In a dark chamber.
And the priest tells you, you know, he gives you absolution or gives you things that you should do or punishment for what you've done. And part of what we would do is he would ask a question, have you had any impure thoughts? Now, an impure thought is different than a behavior. See, an impure behavior is, I have a conflict and I put my world at risk.
You bonk your sister on the head.
Right, I bonk my sister on the head.
That's a behavior.
You know I did that.
I think I heard you say it.
I didn't confess it, though.
At one point.
Okay, but no, you do something. You steal money, you see something, you steal it, and it's a... But an impure thought is you have a lascivious thought about something, or you have a dirty thought. Usually sexual stuff are impure thoughts. Because according to the priest that I knew, if you thought about stealing money, you committed a sin. If you thought about it, if you wanted to, not if you said, no, that's no good for me because I'm a good Catholic and I would never do it. But if you have the thought, if you had the wish,
If
you have the desire.
If you entertained the possibility.
Then it's sinful, which means an issue of morality. Now I'm not going to talk about the Catholic Church. Do we all have a sense of morality? And do you have an inner sense of morality? And now a much bigger question. Is maturity and adulthood developing a personal sense of morality to which you adhere and you do not violate at any time for any reason, and you have a personal sense, an inner code? One of the psychiatrists I spoke to, we had here as a guest recently, said, you know, the difference between the sane people and the not-so-sane people is the sane people have an inner morality. And they live their inner morality. They don't violate it. They don't steal money from going through, from parking meters. They don't try to get away with things. They live an inner morality, and they live it.
I guess they have
a good... They are kind to people.
They have a good relationship with this inner, code. Because I think that inner sense of right and wrong is innate in human beings, unless we're talking about psychopaths. And even they have a basic idea, I think, of right and wrong, maybe different from other people. But I think that the difference in being moral or not is in having a good relationship with that code.
Because you could have a poor relationship with that code.
But that doesn't mean you don't have it.
That's right.
Right.
Now, there are two ways of having a relationship with a moral code. One way of having a relationship with a moral code is it was passed on to you in a punitive way as this is what you must do and should do, or you will be punished or be made to feel guilty. Now, that's one when it comes from the outside to you, and you live by a code that was passed on to you as a kind of a judgment, as a way of controlling you.
Boy, would I have a lot to say about that.
I'm sure. But that's what most people get their sense of morality. Mm-hmm. They get it from the church. They get it from their parents. Now, this is not a bad thing. They get it from their culture.
No,
it's not a bad thing.
It's a way of maintaining boundaries.
And we learn from our elders, too.
Yeah, and it's a way of maintaining a sense of safety, I think, Armand, because if I abide by the rules that are so importantly enforced that I get punished if I break them, if I abide by those rules, I have a sense that perhaps I can keep myself out of trouble. So I think it gives a sense of safety to abide by that kind of moral code. It's almost like being a child a little bit. You have an inner parent that says, this is okay, this is not okay, and I better do what that voice says.
And those of you who are listening to this, I want you to think about your inner codes and where they come from. Because let me give you an example. Let's just take a look at moral values, and we're going to take probably the area of the greatest moral values, which has to do with sex. Now, why would sex have to do so much with it? It is because through sex, we control populations. It is through sex we control procreation, we control multiplication, we control the number of births, the number of people who are in one country, the number of people who are in one religion.
We control resources.
Sure. For example, the Catholic Church says you should not use birth control. We're going to have many more Catholics, right? Because they can't have birth control, you know, and if you, therefore, and then, so it's one way of keeping yourself going. You know, not, I'm sure that's not the only motive, but let's think about, I want to ask you, your moral value as I read these things to you about sex. See what happens to you as I say these words, and I'm going to say these words, and as I say them, see what your judgment has. See what happens in your mind on your moral level. And here's what I'm going to suggest. I'm going to suggest you're going to have an internal reaction, a visceral feeling. You're going to be either attracted or repelled to whatever I say. And then you're going to have a mental reaction, which is where the judgment comes in. So I'm going to start off with a common one, which is homosexuality. Homosexuality, if you say that word, what do you feel inside? Aversion, attraction. And then what do you think? You think, well, it should be okay. It should not be okay. As you imagine, a good percentage of our population thinks it's not okay. It's immoral. Homosexuality, polygamy. Right? Which means that you're allowed to marry parrots. No, that's poly. That's polygamy. Polygamy is you have many mates. I'm sorry, Roberta. I try to take it all seriously.
It's okay.
Do you think polygamy sounds like you're marrying parrots? Poly, get a cracker. Okay, polygamy is where you have many mates.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, you know, over there in Pennsylvania.
Many wives.
In Pennsylvania, many wives, many husbands.
No, many husbands is polyandry.
Okay, polyandry. And, or divorce.
Mm-hmm.
Divorce, there's an issue for you. I was watching something yesterday, and I saw something on TV where a priest said to someone, you know, divorce, this woman was, it was in the Black Donnellys, this woman was married to a bad guy. And the priest said, you know, maybe you should get rid of this marriage. And she said, can I get a divorce? He said, no, in the minds of God, divorce is the doorway to hell. He said, but,
okay,
he said, consider getting an annulment. See, so they had a way around it.
So divorce is immoral, but an annulment is...
An annulment is okay. Okay, abortion, there's a very big issue. Now, there's a moral issue on one level, survival issue on another level, survival of the species, and then there's this gut reaction. There's this reaction on the inside. This thing that tells you you like it, you don't like it, you like having the choice, you don't like having the choice, and whether you have the choice or not, your mind, is it right or is it wrong? Big issue politically nowadays. Premarital sex. There's another big one, you know. What do you think about? When you think about premarital sex, do you feel turned on by the idea? Do you feel turned off by the idea? And then what do you think about it? What do you feel and what do you think? Incest. Clearly enough reason not to have incest. But what does it do to you when you think of incestual relationships, you know? When you think of somebody making love to their brother or their sister or making a relationship with an incestual relationship, does that turn you, make you disgusted, or does it make you feel excited? And then do you think it should be allowed, or do you think it should be forbidden? We go to morality. And then any perversion that people like, you know, people are weird. Everybody likes something different. Some people only like people who are wearing headsets and microphones, and other people are, you know, they have, I like you if you wear high-heel shoes, I like a man if he wears a leather thong, whatever it is, any of the perversions, S&M, voyeurism, all of those, you think they're wrong? Do you think that's morally disgusting, or morally should not be allowed? Pedophilia, zoophilia, right?
Mm-hmm.
Right? making love in the zoo? No, you're not going to go along with that, are you? So those are the sexual ones.
I could go along with that. It's all right. Making love in the zoo sounds romantic.
Zoophilia, right?
Mm-hmm. You know, as you're going through these, Armand, what I'm thinking is, where did it come, the need for people to control other people's sexual behavior, to the point where, you know, there's been times and still somewhere today in the world, if you commit adultery, they stone you to death. I mean, they take their morality very seriously when it joins, especially when morality enjoins with religion.
It's interesting, you know, in San Francisco, if you commit adultery, you get stoned.
Oh, is that right? Oh, okay.
So instead of being stoned to death, we just...
I see. Okay, so where I'm going with this is, it all seems that if you go far enough back in time, all of these codes that dictate how sexuality should be engaged into really have to do with protecting something, protecting someone, and making sure that babies are born and that the species continues on. Because if you go all the way back and you question, for instance, just homosexuality, as whether it's moral or not, you must get to a point where originally the question was about, well, what does it lead to? Because if we consider something evil, then we must look at the consequences of what that behavior leads to eventually. So again, I'm going to say that it looks to me like all of these do's and don'ts pertaining to sexuality have to do with originally with what benefits the self, the individual, versus what benefits the species, the group, the greater good. And then down the road in time, they become codified even into laws to the point where some of these can be punished by death, you know?
Well, let's get away from sexuality for a moment. What about hurting people? What about killing someone? I mean, if you think about instinct, and we have instinct, you know, Roberta, and I think about the fact that there's only one pizza, and my family's hungry and your family's hungry, and I'm going to fight you to the death for the pizza, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I killed you and I take your pizza, right?
Okay.
Now, there's a moral issue there. Do I have a right to kill for it? You know, do I have a right to kill for it?
Some people would say, yes, you do.
And well, listen, if I was in the jungle and I was a monkey.
And then some people say, no, you don't. But, you know, as I'm listening to you, I'm thinking about on TV.
And some other people would say, share the pizza.
Share the pizza. On TV, every night, you have all these people fighting, breaking each other's up. I mean, they're horrible. They're very gruesome fights. So there is a space for breaking the rules of morality as long as it's done in a certain way.
Right. Morality's okay if it's in a ring. It's okay to kill somebody and beat somebody up if we put it
as
in a ring.
As long as we can sell the show.
And it's a spectator thing. No, you're right.
As long as we can make money off of it.
There's a variation on every bit of morality that's out there.
So that as long as there is a way to profit from that behavior, even if it's judged, considered immoral, then we find ways to make room for it.
Well, is it moral to, you might ask a question, you know, is it moral to invade a country consuming citizens and soldiers by hundreds of thousands? And is it okay to wage war on artificial, some people think it's okay.
Don't get me started.
But some people think it's okay, you see what I mean?
Don't get me started.
Or even if you send soldiers over there, you know, and to not give them the proper armor so they're protected, you know, is that a moral issue? Or even worse than that, the soldiers, when they come back and they go to Walter Reed Hospital, just hitting around without getting treatment, is that okay? How does it all become okay, you know? And it's. I'll bet you think it's even a big deal that the Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, the folks who we said did 9/11... are regrouping in Afghanistan, and Osama bin Laden remains a free man, and the morality of this entire war is about him.
Isn't he dead?
No.
Oh, I thought they killed him. Hmm. But you see, okay, so all of that, you're raising a lot of issues there, Armand.
Scandals.
And yet we worry about gay people marrying?
Yes, but you see, here's the point. Now, we've got to go back to the animals, Roberta. It is 1:30 here at WBAI, 99.5 FM. But since we were off the air for 10 minutes, we're going to try to continue our programming with Michael's permission at 99.5 FM in New York City. Is that okay, Michael? Okay, great. Thank you. So let's go back to the animals. Let's talk about the chimps and the monkeys.
Sure.
Right? This is not a group.
All right. Well, there is a big to-do because recently the issue of morality that has historically been the province of philosophers and psychologists has been slipping and sliding fast and furious into the realm of biology. Why? Because animals have been observed to behave in a way that can be considered moral, primates especially, meaning that, for instance, chimpanzees have been observed to die, to drown, in an attempt to save a chimp, a friend, that was in trouble in the zoo's moats or the, you know, ponds, whatever. There have been reports of female chimpanzees observed to remove stones from the hands of male chimpanzees when the two males were about to stone each other. And the females would intervene and try to separate the two and try to remove the weapons from their hands. There have been, of course, a lot of observations pertaining to infants and babies where a mother primate, gorilla, will risk her life to save a baby, not just her own, but another female's baby. And even that story of that gorilla, I forget what zoo, where the gorilla saw that a human baby had fallen into the cage, and she went and scooped it up and put it in a place where this baby was then rescued. Animals have a moral sense.
Well, wait, no, it's not what we're learning here in this particular research. Some animals have a moral sense. According to this researcher, the ones that are closer to humans seem to manifest a moral sense that is more like our moral sense. Remember, we just have our own definition of what morality is. Because in the animal kingdom, it may be different. In the plant kingdom, morality may be different. Hmm. But then what they also said is that the monkeys, right? Now, we talk about apes. And apes are what, Roberta? The apes are the gorillas.
The gorillas, the chimpanzees, chimps, the orangutans, and the bonobos, mm-hmm, and humans.
Right. These are the apes. Monkeys, on the other hand, seem to not show anywhere.
Like macaques, like rhesus monkeys, like capuchin monkeys. Those are monkeys. Those are not apes.
And those monkeys don't seem to show anywhere near the level of morality that the great apes do, that the apes do, and the humans do. So here comes the question. Did morality develop as we're getting up this kind of evolutionary tree, and did it develop as a way of protecting the species in a way so that it would move on better, you know? Like the monkeys, without morality, they're going to kill each other, they're going to eat their babies, they're going to do certain things. But with morality, we're going to be able to shape a culture that will be able to get along better with each other as it populates, as it becomes a bigger population. That seems to be the evidence. Both Roberta and I both have feelings that there are many other animals that do show signs of morality, but let's just stick with this research for a minute. So since there is a moral sense, and I ask you about your moral sense, if you have a moral sense, where does it come from? Did it come from your parents? Did it come from your church? Did it come from your school? Is it something you feel and believe to be true? Are your moral senses yours? Are your moral beliefs yours?
What purpose does it serve? How is it useful to you? How is it beneficial to you? How does it help you, improve the quality of your life? Does it improve the quality of your life, or maybe does it make your life more difficult? And do you believe that your morals are right and, other people's morals, which may be different from yours, are wrong? Is there such thing as right and wrong? And can animals have morals? Is it possible? Is it biological then? Is it something that pertains to biological evolution?
Well, let me go back to your question about your own moral choices. When you think about yourself and that which you've chosen, the code by which you live, you ask yourself the question, because you want to form your own moral code. Is it something I truly believe, or is it something I do? Is it something I do and I don't know why I do it? If you saw somebody throw a piece of paper on the street, would you feel a desire to pick it up and throw it in the trash? Would you feel a desire to bonk the person on the head, and say, don't throw paper in the street? Is there a morality involved in wanting to keep your streets clean? Is there a morality about clean air? Is that a sense of morality, or is it a sense of we want to survive? Is there a thinking that goes with a feeling? When you think about your own sexuality and the own inhibitions that you have, are those inhibitions based on fear, or are they based on a thought process that says, it may be good for me, but it's not going to be good for my life. Now, my life means my life, my relationship with other people, their relationship with me, their relationship with each other, the population, and how we go. I mean, that's the question. The question is, where do you get your moral code?
And what happens when you defy it? What happens to you if you go against your own moral code? And why does it happen? If you eat meat on Good Friday, and if you're a Catholic, and you know you should not eat meat on Good Friday if you're a Catholic, do you feel a sense of guilt? Where does it come from? Who taught you? And, if you abide by that rule, whether it's the Jewish religion, whether it's the Catholic religion, how do we take on so readily these moral codes? Because it seems to me that humans especially have an affinity for morality. It seems like we, more than any other species, care a lot about whether we observe the code or not, whether other people around us do or to what degree. It's an important issue for us, which is, I think, one of the reasons why now even biologists and zoologists are
interested in what this is. Roberta, in what religion are you not allowed to eat anything that comes from a pig?
Muslim,
right?
Mm-hmm.
So whoever you are, if you're eating bacon on Friday, you're in trouble, right? Because if you're Jewish, you shouldn't be eating bacon. Right? And if it's Catholic and it's Friday, you shouldn't be eating bacon. And if you're a Muslim and it's on Friday, this is a moral
conflict.
All right,
so people who eat bacon on Friday.
Anybody who eats bacon on Friday is in a moral dilemma.
No matter what, where they come from. There. No, I mean, yes, Armand. Actually, I don't even think we gave a universal definition of morality. You started in the very beginning of the program to define what morality is. I'm not sure I heard of an entire definition of it.
Okay, it's a complex. It's a definition of right and wrong.
It's a definition of right and wrong.
That's
so
based
it's
on well-defined value systems.
So it's a thinking process.
Yes, it's a thinking process.
And so it could happen that my instinct or my tendency would be to behave a certain way.
Your moral code dictates your personal conduct.
But my morality says no. Okay, so here I have a question for you, Armand. Is it possible, then, that the more we get to know and accept ourselves, the more our behavior and our morality coincide, so that there's no longer a thinking process involved? It becomes an innate, just simply behaving the way that the inner morality dictates, but without having to think about it, without having to choose.
Running down the street the other day, I was going down Lexington Avenue. A man comes running after me and says, "Hey, I've got this piece of jewelry, $5, pure gold." I wouldn't even talk to him. I don't talk to him, not because I think he's a thief, but I don't deal with that. I am not involved in stolen products and getting them for cheap. I don't care how good a bargain it is. It's not in my world. When I turned away and I said, nope, I just turned away, and it was like he's saying, but you know, and I'm saying, it's not in my world. The way it feels is that's not the way I am. I don't do that. Like, you know, I know women. There's a question I always had about we had as men as friends. When I was younger, I remember among a bunch of men friends we had a conversation with, which had to do with whether or not any man in the group would have a secret relationship with the woman who is the mate of anyone in the group. And I remember the men saying, no, I would never do that. Your wife could walk over to me naked and flirt with me 100%. He says, I wouldn't go anywhere near her. He says, it's just not in my code. And I've heard women talk to each other about that. If they're friends, you know, we're close friends. And if your man flirts with me, I'm not going anywhere near that. It's a felt sense. There are things I don't do. I do not take things from people, you know?
But it doesn't involve a choice.
It's no longer a choice because
right,
I've done it
I'm
so
saying.
Often.
That's what I'm saying.
Because it's so clear to me. Now, when you're younger, there's an ambivalence because there are needs, you see. You want to especially around sexuality, you know. You have so much stuff driving you to do one thing sexually.
But I really also think, Armand, that you don't yet know yourself well enough to know what happens to you if you go outside your moral code.
Well, I think when you're younger, you have a stronger driving force of hormones that are telling you to do things on one hand, and a moral code that's a thought process that's telling you to do the opposite. For example, if you're a 15-year-old boy loaded with testosterone in a room with naked women who are all coming after you, you don't have much choice. You know, I mean, you could do all the moral choosing you want. Your body is going to respond, and it's going to take over.
And you're saying that if you are a 65-year-old man in a room full of women that are coming at you, you're going to behave differently?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well.
Test me. Absolutely.
All right, people. Test our minds.
No, the truth of it is, it wouldn't faze me one bit. I would look at it and
but
I'd,
see,
I'd
I
say,
think it's because
I'd say, what are these 16-year-olds wanting to do with me anyway? And why do I want to be involved in
this?
Oh,
the women are 16 years old now? That you didn't say that before.
Oh, I was just running my fantasy there. Excuse me.
What I'm
in
saying...
In the zoo, no less.
And in the zoo. In the it zoo. Has to be the zoo,
it has
of
to
course.
Be in the zoo. That's my only place.
What I'm saying,
where
Armand,
the monkey saved a... Where they,
the same zoo.
Where the chimpanzee saved a baby chimpanzee.
I believe that, yes, as we grow into, I don't know where this is taking us, but as we grow into the human being that we are sculpting day in and day out, you know, I do have an image of us as a sculptor that just chisels away at that beautiful chunk of marble that at first is just a chunk of marble that you don't know yet what's in it. But yet, as you chip away one little sliver after the other, this masterpiece starts to show up. And when the masterpiece is there, is a masterpiece moral? A masterpiece is a masterpiece. There's no question of morality.
I think, Roberta, that I have to give a lot of room to what I was saying earlier, and I'm sure you agree. When the hormones do not dictate as much, when your biology doesn't command as much, it's easier to make a moral choice. Older people make better moral choices than younger people. They just do, because they're not rampant. When you are short on dopamine or on endorphins, and when you're looking to get something that makes you feel good, whether you go to drugs or don't go to drugs, it's you're saying to yourself, I want to feel this thing, and my need to feel it is bigger than my thinking pattern.
And I'll deal with that later.
I'll deal with that later. And you're exactly right to think that, too. Because if you sacrifice your moral code when you're 17, you got plenty of chance to pick it up later. You know, by the time you're 65, you could say no thank you.
Except that I think, Armand, that if we violate our inner moral code...
Well, violate's a big word.
Well...
How about if we
break it, we violate
if you,
it.
Well, if violate's a big word. That means you really, really violate it.
What
if you bend your moral code?
Okay, so whatever. But if we do that enough...
Oh, then you violate.
It's not that it stretches, you see. I think that the idea in a young person is that if I do this thing long enough, eventually I'll numb out. And this morality that's bothering me, that's telling me not to do it, will go away. And I think that there's another thing coming for youth who think that way. I myself included, I admit it, and it doesn't work that way. In fact, I think morality becomes even stronger when we challenge it. Don't you think?
Challenge it, meaning question it?
We question it through behavior, not just intellectually, but we question it in the sense that we challenge it. Well, is it really wrong to do this? Is it really wrong to smoke a cigarette if you are a teenager? Is it really wrong to drink, you know, a shot of whiskey if you are below age? Is it really wrong? Why is it wrong? You know, you test it. You're testing when you're young. But I think that if you try to just go by common codes, well, you may find that some of them you can do away with, but you cannot do away with your own inner, innate moral code. That's never going to go away, in my view, in my experience.
If you could find your own inner code.
Right, which I think happens with age.
And that's where separating it from what you've been taught you should do. You know, so if you have somebody, and I have many clients who come in with these very strong moral codes, moral dilemmas, you know, because they're saying, I feel one way, and I want to do another thing, but my moral code says a different thing.
But it's an imposed moral code?
Yes, they're right, all imposed moral codes. Right. And that doesn't mean imposed moral codes are bad codes.
No.
It means they may be right, but they're not yours.
Right.
And what you've got to do is own it. In order to become an adult, you have to find your own moral code from the moral codes that have been offered to you.
Right.
And you've got to say, is this the one I want to live by?
Right, and that becomes operative, and it becomes operative to the degree that Armand was describing a while ago, where there's no longer a thinking choice involved. It's just the way one is. One doesn't deal with stolen goods. That's it. There's no question about it. But if it's imposed upon us, I believe we constantly wrestle with it because it doesn't seem fair, it doesn't seem right, and it doesn't seem to apply, and we continuously, it's almost like we're trying to break free from a chain that's holding us back into experimenting with behaviors that are attractive to us, like people with homosexuality. If they are homosexual and they keep trying not to be, it becomes almost an obsession with it, because the self keeps trying to break through this imposition that is artificial, that doesn't really belong to this, to the biogenetic structure of it. Wow, that was a complex thing. But
yeah, but I think that was well done. I think also too, Roberta, you know, I want to make mention that there are other moral issues that come up, and when you have an agreement in the society to do a certain thing, and I want to talk about federal income tax.
Okay.
I know it sounds like it's far away from this, but here comes the federal income
tax. It's not too far away.
You know?
We're at the end of March.
Yeah, and that's why I want to bring it up. Because, you know, here's a moral code that's kind of an agreement that people have. And the agreement is... you're going to take some of your money and we're going to use it for the government however the government chooses to use it. Now here comes a morality issue. I give my money to the government. No, the money gets there right. It's not I give my money to the government, because you don't give money to the government. The government in many countries put an 80% tax on your earnings. There are countries where they say, give us 80% of whatever you earn and we give you 20%. The United States has one of the lowest income taxes of anywhere in the world. So it's not that you're giving the money to the government. The government says you're allowed to earn money, but we get a quarter of it, or we get a third of it. It is not a matter of you're giving it to them. However, when your very government is taking the money that you give them and using it for things that violate your moral code, now you get into a double moral standard. You may not be somebody who likes to cheat and steal and do things like that, but now you're thinking to yourself, every penny I don't give you may actually save a life somewhere in the world. Mm. And this moral dilemma gets involved. Now, of course, you can always create a moral dilemma when you think, as a result of my moral dilemma, I'll wind up with having more money. You know, mm-hmm. You can create a moral dilemma about, should I feed the poor? Well, no, maybe I shouldn't feed them so they could feed themselves. And it means I save more money. Mm-hmm. You know, all of these factors get thrown in it. But I think there's something about agreeing to a game, agreeing by certain laws, and then choosing to break the laws without telling the other side that you're breaking it.
Mm-hmm.
I think the moral issue becomes when you are taking a stand and saying, my morality says I cannot do what you want me to do.
Which confirms what we were saying a while ago, that the inner morality that fits with the self supersedes the imposed morality that is, you know, externally accepted by the group. And I think that that's one of the downfalls of a government that imposes unreasonable standards of morality on its people. It's its own downfall in the long run, because eventually people are going to catch up with the fact that, you know, this kind of morality does not serve the best interest of anyone, therefore I'm not going to abide by it. I think you said it very well. You brought up the issue of taxes, but yeah.
It's a big issue.
Yeah.
It's a big issue, not one to be overlooked, because whatever choice you make, if you're going to choose to stand up for what you believe in, stand up to what you believe in, it makes you feel good when you stand up.
Sure.
But when you do it in a sneaky way, it doesn't feel good.
Hmm.
It doesn't. Being sneaky, feeling guilty, all of those things, those are all part of the child reaction to sneaking around a moral code. Being an adult, being a grown-up, and being effective in this world means a commitment for which you're willing to stand up, you know, and to take a beating.
Well, I think now you're asking a lot of people.
I'm not asking them. I'm telling them I understand the conflict with doing it.
I give my full approval to people who are...
I'm sorry. We didn't say whatever she was about to say on the air. I have just had to pot down Roberta Maria Atti as she was about to say something illegal.
Really?
Yeah, it's illegal. You can't say it.
Okay, well, forget that. In any case, morality is a very interesting topic, and especially now that has become a biological issue, no longer philosophical.
It's bigger than you think, my friends. Take a look on the internet. Look up the word morality, and you'll see a lot more conversation than you've ever seen before. This is Armand DeMille with Roberta Maria Atti. We're with you today. I want to thank you very much for bearing with us. Roberta, thank you so much for working with me on this issue.
It was a pleasure, as usual.
I'm looking forward to the next thing we do on the frauds, on the frauds
in
nature.
Yes.
If you want to be in touch, you can get Roberta at Roberta for Health.
No.
I'm sorry.
www.creativehealthsolutions.org.
Armand DeMille, thepositivemind.com.
Nobody told you how to unfold your love. I don't know how someone controlled you. They bought and sold you. and I notice it's turning, while my guitar gently weeps. With every mistake, we must surely be learning. Still my guitar gently weeps. I don't know how you were diverted. Perverted too. I don't know how you were inverted. No one alerted you. I look from the wings at the play you are staging, while my guitar gently weeps. As I'm sitting here doing nothing but aging, still my guitar gently weeps.